This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Later this hour, we'll take a look at the current state of medical marijuana in Florida through the lens of tonight's Cannabis Speaks Symposium, which is a first for Southwest Florida. We'll be talking with the event moderator and one of the participating doctors. But first, right now, minors can marry in the state of Florida if they have parental permission or if the couple is expecting a child and a judge approves. But a new bill aims to change that. Republican State Senator Lizbeth Beniquisto of District 27, that district covers most of Lee County, has introduced Senate Bill 140, which would ban marriages involving a minor. Arguments supporting the bill cite the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists' conclusions that child marriage leads to increased risk of domestic violence as well as mental and physical illnesses. Those findings come from a 2016 study called Child Brides, Forced Marriage, and Partner Violence in America. Dr. Judith McFarlane was the lead researcher of that study. She's a doctor of public health, a professor of nursing, and the Perry Chair in Health Promotion and Disease Prevention at Texas Women's University. And she joins us now to discuss her findings in the context of this recent bill. Dr. McFarlane, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Great to have you. We're taking a closer look at marriages involving minors in Florida as state lawmakers consider this proposed ban. And I encourage listeners to join the conversation as well. Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And to start us off, Dr. McFarlane, tell us what constitutes the designation of child bride in the first place.
Child bride is defined as a marriage when the female is less than 18 years of age. Worldwide, more than 700 million women alive today were married before their 18th birthday, which is defined as a child marriage. And one in three of these child marriages happened before the age of 15 years.
That's kind of a startling number, 700 million. Apparently, this is a more common occurrence in the U.S. than probably many people realize.
I think we were quite surprised when we looked at the findings. We never have been able to identify the prevalence of forced child marriage. We know how many females less than 18 years of age are married each year in the U.S., but we do not know how many of those are forced. And so this research was to enable us to get a better evidence for how common forced marriage is and what were the attempts at forced marriage and who was doing the forcing, and so that we could look at the outcomes of those forced marriage attempts. And we found that one in six women reaching out for services for domestic violence, one in six reported a forced marriage attempt, with 45% of them younger than 18 years of age at the time of the attempt.
Is that
23% reported death threats. So I think we need to know that we are looking at something very serious here. And 60% reported a pregnancy, and just as you said, a young female body is not prepared for the pregnancy that she is carrying at that young age. Both her health and the child she is carrying health are in jeopardy when you have a young pregnancy.
Was the prevalence of this, you know, something that you have known about for a long time? And what I mean is this, you know, as you sort of came across these women or found out how many of them there were, is that kind of what made you wanted to study this issue of you know, minors involved in marriage in the first place?
In the first place, violence against women is very epidemic and pervasive from worldwide, including the U.S. We have multiple studies over multiple years that one in three females will be physically assaulted at least once over her lifetime by an intimate partner. And so the question begs, when does that violence begin? And so therefore, to get more information on that, we asked women reaching out for services from intimate partner violence if they had experienced a forced marriage or an attempt at a forced marriage, to try to get the understanding among us, when does the violence actually begin? It's not when she reaches out for services. Sometimes that violence may have been going on for 10, 15, 20 years. And if the forced marriage happened at age 12, 13, then we have child abuse beginning the forced marriage and the violence over her lifetime that not only affects her, but her children. And that's what this research is documenting, is the first time we have never known before the prevalence. We had no idea because I don't think we asked. Right. You only know the answers to the questions you ask.
Right, right. Can you give us kind of an overview, you know, structurally of how this multi-year study sort of came together and really how you kept these nearly 300 women engaged and involved over the course of so many years?
Well, we wanted to know in Houston the long-term outcomes of domestic violence. We knew the short-term outcomes. We know that women go to emergency departments. We know they have more trouble with pregnancies. We know there's chronic mental health problems. But we don't know from a group of women. And we wanted to follow a certain group of women over time and their children to learn what the long-term impact was of domestic violence for women and their children. So we would know where were the intervention points, where were the opening portals that we could have the most meaningful impact to interrupt the violence, prevent further violence, and ensure the better well-being and functioning of women, children, and healthier, stronger families. And so that led us to further questions about when the violence began and learning that for one in six of the women, it began with an attempted or forced marriage.
Now, don't marriages involving a minor typically have to undergo some sort of closer scrutiny, you know, via, you know, a judge approving the marriage or parental consent? I'm just wondering how forced marriages are even occurring here in the United States.
Well, frequently there's a parental consent. Traditionally, that has been used. As you just mentioned at the onset of the show, that if parents consent, then the minor can be married. And so now we're looking deeper into what does that mean. The parent may be the abuser. It could be a parent that is economically depriving the child, socially depriving the child, a parent that does not want that child to be married, and is the parent is actually part of the abusive situation. We found many of our women reported that their parents had threatened forced isolation, economic threats. We won't support you anymore. You cannot live at this house anymore. You're going to be an outcast in our family. We will never talk to you again unless you marry this man.
Is that part of what makes it so hard to really get, dependable data on this? Because if you're talking about young girls who are you know, forced into this by our definition of the term, but who, you know, perhaps from their perspective, they've been socialized into it. They've been, you know, raised to believe that this is normal. It's the expectation. As you mentioned, they could be threatened. And so for them, they're not overtly speaking out against this. They're not saying, I don't want to do this. Is that part of why it's so hard to really get that data?
Well, certainly, if you're 13, 14, 15, 16, you don't have the social skills, you don't have the self-esteem, self-worth, and you've been threatened. Right. And as I said at the beginning of the show, we found when we asked the women that a large percentage, exactly 23%, reported death threats if they did not marry the man.
Wow. You know, this seems to imply also that the practice may be tied to some deep-seated cultural or religious identities. Did your research look into that?
We did not ask about religious affiliation. We did ask country of birth of the man that was forcing her to marry him, and it was only a very few, four or five, were outside of the U.S. The force occurred 90% of the time in the U.S., and the majority were U.S. citizens.
Wow. You know, for those who were born out of the country or might be recent arrivals, is that in and of itself a barrier? I'm thinking these women might simply be unaware that there is help out there, that they have rights, and that they have legal recourse.
Yes, and just as a minor word of correction, you said women, and remember,
minors. Right.
13, 14, 15, these are girls. Mm-hmm. These are girls, sir. And they don't have those negotiation skills. They do not have the wherewithal when they have had their personal safety and well-being thwarted, when they have had their violation, certainly. It's a human rights violation, but they've been threatened with death. They've been threatened with deprivation. They've been threatened with outcasts.
Right, right.
One begins to understand the dilemma that they are in.
Well, there's a woman here in Florida named Sherry Johnson who has emerged as a vocal supporter of this proposed ban in Florida on minor involved marriages. And she says she was forced to marry when she was just 11 years old. And even though she's 58 years old now, she says that experience is something that she still struggles with psychologically. I was hoping you could speak to the long-lasting psychological impacts associated with child marriages. You've talked about a prevalence of suicide attempts. Is this common?
How common it is, I do not know. But we do know that the women that reported the forced marriage attempt certainly reported a lot more symptoms of headache, nausea, vomiting. We call it somatization. There's not a medical reason for it. They had a higher incidence of post-traumatic stress disorder, which we hear a lot about in relationship to vets coming back. But also women that have been traumatized will have post-traumatic stress that interferes with their decision-making, ability to hold down a job, ability to function, ability to parent. And the children, we selected one child at random from each of these women that reported a forced marriage attempt or an actual marriage. And their children had behavioral problems that the women did not report the forced attempt. Did not have. They had behavioral problems of hostility, delinquency. They were more likely to be depressed. They were more likely to have academic problems. So not only is the woman affected long-term, it's just not an immediate thing that resolved itself, but she is affected long-term. Many of these women, the forced attempt or the actual marriage occurred 20, 30 years ago. And they were felt still impacted by that young event, and their children were impacted by it. As we measured, they had far more behavioral disorders than children with a mother who had not had that experience early on.
Wow. And is this study that we're talking about today, is that completed, or do you continue to follow these women?
It's published.
Right.
Yes, I'm continuing to follow the women. The aspect we're talking about, the child brides and forced marriage, is published, and I think there's probably a way you could put that on your website, hopefully, so you're listenership could go and read it.
Yeah, I've read that, and I think we do have a link up there. I'll double check and make sure just in case, but I'm pretty sure that's up there. It's interesting that this research is ongoing because, you could presumably be talking with women who had, very, very young girls who had very, very young babies when this began, who now might be celebrating double-digit birthdays. You can get a lot of, ongoing data this way.
Yes, we're following the women for 8 years, and so we're ending pretty soon, but we have definitely seen intergenerational violence. Women that began violence early, their children are doing much worse than women that did not have that early onset of the violence. Mm. So what happens to mothers affects their children, and perhaps those children, their children will also be affected. It doesn't just stop. It goes intergenerational until we interrupt violence and recognize that when someone wants to get married and they're not 18 years of age, we need to look further and deeper and ask more questions. And I think that's what Senate Bill 140 seeks to do, is to use research and evidence to better protect the safety, well-being, and health of Floridian women.
Did Senator Beniquisto or supporters of this bill in Florida, you know, have they reached out to you in any way regarding this bill? I guess I'm wondering if we might see you, testifying before lawmakers in the Florida Capitol at some point.
I certainly hope so. We just went through this in Texas, and states are coming on board looking at no marriage younger than 16 and Texas, you can get married with parental consent, 16 and 17, but younger than 16, there's no marriage. That became law in September in Texas. And so we're watching our states very carefully. But as states acknowledge the information, the evidence, the data, the testimonials, as the lady you referred to, then it's becoming apparent that we need policy to protect our youth and to ensure a better future.
Right. And today, you know, we're looking specifically at, efforts here in Florida. But do the rules regarding marriage of a minor tend to vary greatly from state to state?
It depends on the exceptions allowed.
Okay.
It's more about the variability in exceptions and what's considered an exception.
Gotcha. Well, let's take a call now from Peter in Fort Myers. Peter, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hi, John. Interesting topic as a father of a 12-year-old. It's disturbing in a lot of ways. I know she didn't. I know the researcher did not mention or did not ask, you know, religious affiliation and such, which is fine. But I wanted to know, even if they're U.S. citizens, was it more Western-based, Western society-based families, or was it more Eastern, Middle Eastern families, where it is more prevalent around the world to have these so-called, if not forced, they call them arranged marriages? I didn't know if they had a percentage breakdown of the European descent as opposed to Eastern or Middle Eastern descent, or even Asian, as far as the breakdown of arranged marriages or forced marriages, if not in a religious affiliation, a country affiliation of origin, even if they are U.S. citizens. That was my question.
Thanks for the call, Peter. What about that issue? Is that something that it was considered in the research? I mean, do you know where, if they weren't American or if they were American, but perhaps first or second generation, how, you know, cultural background could have come into play?
Well, all of our women were from Houston, and over half of them self-identified as Hispanic. And if they were not a U.S. citizen, they frequently came from Mexico, a few from El Salvador. So we didn't have anybody from the Middle East. But this is more common in our area, that we're going to have a larger ethnic affiliation being Hispanic, non-Hispanic. And of those that are non-Hispanic, Anglo and African American are the largest. We do have some Asian, but in our population, we just had very few, because that's the constituency of the demographics that we drew the sample from, if that makes sense.
Sure.
It's Houston.
Sure.
If we would have gotten a different answer if we would have gone, you know, to the Pakistani end of Houston and just sampled from that group. So, but we sampled a cross-section of Houston, all women that came for services because of domestic violence in Houston. We took the first 300 that had never reached out for services before. And we're following them for 8 years.
And you did touch on the higher prevalence of early pregnancy among these girls in forced marriages or in minor marriages. And you've touched on your long history with this subject, but your research into the abuse of pregnant women in the early 90s was arguably the first of its kind. I was hoping you could maybe tell us a bit about what you discovered in that study.
Well, I had a student, I'm a teacher, I'm at the university, and I had a student ask me a question if women were abused, if they were hit, sexually violated when they were pregnant. And I said, well, of course they are. Hmm. I was just at the shelter the night before because I'm a volunteer, and we'd had two women at the shelter that were abused when they were pregnant. Pregnancy is not protection. And so the student, being very astute, said, how often does that happen? Well, I had no idea because we had not done any research at that point. Mm-hmm. And so we stopped class and we went to the library, and apparently no one else had either, because there was no data on how often women are abused physically or sexually when they're pregnant. And so we did a study. And I think that's probably the study that you're referring to that was published in the American Medical Association,
yes.
Journal of American Medical Association, JAMA. And we found that 1 in 6 pregnant women reported at least 1 episode of physical or sexual violence during their pregnancy. And when we continued to follow the women, we found that their infants were more likely to be born low birth weight, less than 5.5 pounds, which puts that child in greater jeopardy of medical conditions.
And things that can, you know.
No one had asked.
Right.
No one had asked. We don't know what we don't ask. And so then began a long line of research in our country with increased awareness about how common violence is. And frequently it begins during pregnancy.
Wow.
It begins during pregnancy. Because of jealousy, attention goes from the man to the woman. There's a whole dynamic that we would need a lot of time to talk and think about and to have a good discourse on it. But frequently the violence does begin during pregnancy at a time when women are very vulnerable, at a time when not only the women's health, but that developing child is at risk because of the stress, because of the violence. Frequently, women will be hit directly in the abdomen during a violent episode. It's like the abdomen is the focus
right.
of the trauma and violence. That was an excellent question, an excellent question. And it just begs that we need to know so much more, audience. We need to know so much more about the extent in our country and the enforced marriage does not just happen in other countries. It happens in our home country. It happens to us. We're each individually responsible, I feel, for the safety of our youth and the well-being of families.
Well, we are talking about marriages involving minors in Florida as state lawmakers will consider a proposed ban on the practice in the 2018 legislative session. We're talking with the lead author of a study exploring links between child brides, forced marriages, and partner violence, Dr. Judith McFarlane. And I invite listeners to join the conversation with your comments and questions. Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. Or reach out to us on Twitter. We're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And on this issue of understanding how prevalent this is and really getting that into our broader cultural understanding, I'm thinking back on a previous career of mine when I worked in an emergency room. And I remember when public awareness of the problem of human trafficking began to grow and training on how to identify potential signs of human trafficking victims coming in for treatment became part of the education of emergency medical staff. When it comes to the risks associated with, you know, forced or child marriages and knowing the signs to look for, is this thing something that you think is largely missing in the education of American healthcare professionals? And even if it is, what difference would it make considering that often these marriages are legally sanctioned?
That they're hardly legally sanctioned, that they're already legally sanctioned. If we asked women, and it's recommended in our country to the U.S. Public Health Service that we ask all women if they are in abusive relationships, that this be part of standard of care, like when you go to a clinic, emergency department, you get your blood pressure checked. You would be very insulted if you didn't get your blood pressure checked. You'd
right.
wonder what kind of place you were at. So added to that is the vital sign of safety and that all women be assessed for partner violence and ask if they are being hurt. Are they being abused? And that gives us a window of opportunity to go in and to offer intervention, safety, counseling, guided referral, to connect her to services, because just as you said, she may have lived in silence mm-hmm. for years and years. And then once we know she is experiencing intimate partner violence, we now need to know when that violence began. Did it begin with a forced marriage? Did it begin as a child bride? Because we know 60% of the forced marriages, child brides, are accompanied by pregnancy. So that violence, if it began that early, we need to know about it to offer her an optimum plan of care, because we may be dealing with headaches, we may be dealing with depression, we may be dealing with many conditions that stem from the violence. If we don't ask her about the violence, we won't know about the violence, and we will never be able to address the root causes and protect her and her children from further trauma, from dealing with that violence, as your earlier person you acknowledged was 50-some years ago.
Yes.
And she is still haunted by it today.
Yes. I think this might be a good time to have you tell us a bit about the app that you helped create called the First Assessment Screening Tool.
The First Assessment Screening Tool is a 10-minute app that can be downloaded from Google or Apple onto any smart device, and it gives first responders and frontline providers of services to abused women a very valid assessment tool to look at her risk as well as her children's risk for chronic mental health problems, their safety. It looks at probability for the children having problems. Frequently, these children don't fit in. They cannot attend a daycare or a school because there's so many behavioral problems, and people just don't know what's going on. And it's frequently the violence that is driving the behavioral issues of the child. But because women have never been asked, and so the First Assessment Screening Tool allows us to take all of our 8 years of research on these 300 women, and we have put it into a handheld device. The app can be downloaded at no charge, and it allows frontline providers and first responders to immediately know which women are in need of immediate services for mental health and safety, and as well as their children.
Well,
this is a triage tool. Thank you.
Gotcha. Yes. No, that's fine.
I could go on for 3 days, as you can tell.
Yeah. No, this has been a great conversation. We are a bit out of time. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to share any final thoughts you may want to with our listeners today.
Speak up. Ask for your healthcare provider to ensure the safety of all youth and all women by asking about violence. We can't keep it in the closet anymore. It happens. It's here. We are a people that can take care of each other. We are a people that can look out for the safety of our youth. But we have to ask them if they are being forced into this marriage.
Dr. Judith McFarlane is a doctor of public health, professor of nursing, and the Perry Chair in Health Promotion and Disease Prevention at Texas Women's University, and lead author of the study we've been discussing today titled Child Brides, Forced Marriage, and Partner Violence in America, published by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Thanks so much for sharing your insights with us today.
Thank you, audience, for listening.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, WGCU's Mike Canary takes the host chair as we explore the current state of medical marijuana in Florida. That's just ahead. Stay with us.